Due to the subject matter of this week's pick, the following episode contains infrequent coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
I want to team up, like Batman and Robin.
Nobody wants to be Robin.
What's wrong with Robin? Wouldn't you like Big Daddy's Robin?
Okay, Robin wishes he was me.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a speed I'm getting into.
And welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 104, the comic book show that believes with no power comes no responsibility. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm David Longo.
In this issue, Warner blinks first and moves Batman vs. Superman. Batman v. Superman. When asked for comment, Marvel said, on your left. Then Warner and DC announced 9 new dates for films based on DC Comics. Our favourite so far is the 27th of July, 2018. Additionally, Joss Whedon wonders what to do now that he's finished shooting Avengers 2. We've heard Ant-Man might need a hand keeping its schedule. Also, it's Genius, Imperial, Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon and more in what we've been reading. Plus, our Kick-Ass Pick of the Week, Kick-Ass 3 by Mark Millar and John Romita Jr. with special guest panellist Laramie Taylor, writer and artist of the Image comic series A Voice in the Dark. This is Behind the Panels. That seems like a vaguely appropriate song to be playing at the start of a Kick-Ass book.
Why not?
And we should say, we did have the disclaimer at the top of the show, and like we did with Kick-Ass 2, language gets a little blue.
Actually, quite blue.
Quite blue. Because, spoilers, people, we've actually recorded the back half of this episode first, as opposed to what we normally do.
So we know what's coming.
Tell me, David, what comes up next? The reason we did that is because we've got special guest this week, Laramie Taylor, as we mentioned at the top of the show, and we were Skyping him in, and just for, you know, international time zones and all that sort of stuff, we did that bit in advance. So, you know, that's a really good discussion, and we'll plug it again right now. A Voice in the Dark, if you're not reading that book, go out and buy it in trade.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you people? Because it's a sort of book. He actually did a trailer recently. It's on YouTube, and you got that real voice of God guy to do the trailer.
In a world.
Pretty much that. And in that they go, it's the kind of thing people on Tumblr always complain doesn't get written. You know? and it's true. It is. It's got all the things, you know, strong female characters, you know, suspense, twists, all that kind of stuff.
Violence, mayhem, you know.
End of the world. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. It is a great book, though, and it was such a pleasure to have Laramie back, as always. But you'll hear that shortly. In the meantime, here's a word from somebody's sponsor.
Here's another exciting episode of Sanger Harris Superhero. Being a superhero can get messy. Luckily, they're wearing Billy the Kid Cramerton slacks. They've saved the day because they're machine washable, bleach safe. Presto, good as new. You can be a Sanger Harris superhero too in Billy the Kid Cramerton slacks. Just $12.99 to $15.99 in Children's World at Sanger Harris.
If they're Billy the Kid slacks, what's he wearing?
It's a good question, and you
something
think,
that isn't machine washable, I guess.
And you think that Billy the Kid slacks would go for more than $12.99?
You would think.
That clip was actually hilarious because Spider-Man's running around. if you look that up, the Sanger Harris superhero ad. Go look it up. I'm not quite sure if Sanger Harris still exists. But as I said, somebody's sponsor is out there.
Somebody's sponsor sometime, somewhere. Someone has to pay.
I love the idea of, like, you want to be a superhero? Wear slacks. That's one thing people always comment about superheroes. They're the machine washable slacks.
You gotta keep the good pleats.
Pleat man. Actually, if I was a superhero, that's exactly what I'd be. I'd be slack man.
Slack man. I'd be slacker. But anyway, that's beside the point.
When trouble's brewing, I do nothing. a bunch of stuff came out this week, some of which is actually our pick of the week and some of which will be our pick of the week next week. But we will talk about the other stuff we've read in a little section I like to call What We've Been Reading.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
And we did. Those lines were well read between.
I didn't want to read the actual lines. I just wanted to read between.
We read between the lines and behind the panels. Do we? I don't think we've ever discussed this. None of us have learnt to read.
No. We just look at the pretty pictures.
Yeah. That's why the sign language issue of Hawkeye was awesome.
Absolutely. It's the first comic book I actually understood.
We didn't even read the comics that we talk about.
Yeah. we just make the stuff. It's amazing how accurate we actually are.
Make it up as we go along, people.
Well, Thanos, the
We're the Wikipedia writers of podcasts.
No, there's a t-shirt for you. Thanos, the Infinity Revelation came out this week. This is Jim Starlin's return to the Marvel Cosmic Universe. And we won't talk about that in detail except to say that it came out because that's our Kick-Ass Pick of the Week
next week.
And we all bought it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet because it's our pick next week. But I've heard mixed reviews. So
sitting up on my shelf over there.
Your shelf, not your iPad.
Not my iPad. It's on the shelf. It's actually in print. It's right there.
We can see it, people.
Yeah, they can see it. What I thought was really interesting was I actually did have a quick flick through it when I first picked it up at the shop. And I went, hang on, I've read this. Fill me in. Where have I read the first two pages of this?
Oh, it was either in one of two things.
Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War.
No. Specifically the page, Thanos appears on the Guardian ship.
They all
get into fight positions and he says to Drax, let's try something different, let's talk.
I think
I've read this.
I'm pretty sure that was in possibly something around Free Comic Book Day.
Is that what it is?
I've read, and I went,
hang on, have I read this?
There was a preview at the very end of the Marvel book.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I thought I was losing my mind there for a minute. I thought, what the hell is this?
No, that's where it was. So the other book that we love, and we're getting towards the end of Tom Taylor and Nicola Scott's run, is Earth 2, number 26, came out this week. This was the final issue of the Kryptonian kind of arc where we finally get a confrontation.
And what a nice reveal in this book, too.
Yeah, it was an amazing reveal, David.
Yeah, well, look, in this book we've got the other Kryptonian finally donning his suit and basically having the smackdown with Superman that we wanted him to have. And I love that line where Superman says, why are you stronger than me?
Yeah.
And of course, what we find out, are we going to spoil this? Let's not spoil it totally, but we will just say that Superman starts to fall apart. Mm. And it's actually a really interesting reveal as to what it was.
Because
all this time.
There's been all sort of references sort of saying, you can't be Superman. Clark would never act like this.
Exactly. You know? So the personality is wrong. For Superman. And so now we finally found out what has been going on.
Yeah, so that's really good.
I also love, I love the Queen of Atlantis giving the god an aneurysm.
Oh, that was,
he just comes storming up and she just looks at him and he just collapses.
So now we've gotten two different comics. We've had like a really kick-ass depiction of, kick-ass, it's our theme of the week.
Yeah, it is.
A really kick-ass depiction of Aquaman over in Geoff Johns' original run. Yep. And now Mira is over in Earth 2, effectively, but she's just as kick-ass. So.
Yeah, and she literally brings all of the liquid in his body to his brain.
It's interesting because Zack Snack Snyder has been talking to the media and sort of defending Aquaman, saying he's actually quite a kick-ass character. I'm not going to spoil anything, but
and then, of course, there were those rumors of Jason Momoa happening kicking around this week as well.
So that'll be interesting. So whether or not he'll be another person crammed into Batman v.
You just know what it's going to be, though. It's going to be like the final 2 seconds of that movie is just going to be like,
it'll be like the end
them
of
appearing
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where the last 15 minutes are just cramming in all the characters they can so they can set
well,
up
the last 30 seconds cramming Rhino in.
Rhino in, yeah. Like, and the last thing you want to do
is cram a rhino in at the last minute.
Yeah.
No, he could still impress us. Can you imagine how cool it would be? Like, there's no setup to it at all. Just right at the end, a huge wave comes down and Jason Momoa is riding a giant whale. Like,
what I want to see.
Like, and then the cut to credits. Like,
do you know what I want to see on screen?
Credit.
I want to see. Do you know what I want to see
and
on screen?
And Bradley Cooper's playing the whale.
I want to see that.
Oh, no, the whale's like, its blowhole goes. And it's blowhole goes and sprays Batman and Superman with water. Then they turn and through the reveals.
Do you know what I want to see on screen? And this is, it's one shot I want to see in screen. And I want to see who can pull this off. Hopefully they do it in the DC universe. I don't know. But that shot of Aquaman standing there, the army moving into the ocean, whatever that force is, and that just wall of sharks coming out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
Remember in that one issue of Justice League?
Sharknado 3.
And it was that moment where you go, Aquaman is badass.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah, they could just troll it all. Like, the second you see Aquaman, the big reveal, it cuts back around to Batman and Superman, and just dead silence.
Eating fish and chips.
No, not even that. Just dead silence. Batman just goes, and then credits. Yeah.
And the next film was just them going, no, really. But
the post credit stinger cuts back to Batman and Superman. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so some of the other stuff that came out quickly this week, Grayson 2 came out. I liked it because it's a little less Winter Soldier.
I liked it a little bit more than the first issue. That was good.
I'll very, very quickly mention Green Arrow 34, Green Lantern 34. I was disappointed that Jeff Lemire was leaving Green Arrow, but he seems to be running out of steam at this point. So I'll be interesting to see somebody else take a take on these characters, although it is going to be the TV writers who are doing it. So I think we're pretty much going to have Arrow the comic book for the rest of the year.
I think what we've been seeing in the webcomic is just going to be the main book.
Yes. Genius number one, David.
Genius number one. What a strange little book this was.
It is the first issue of a new Image miniseries.
Yes.
Came out.
Well, thank God, because I don't think you could sustain this for a long period of time. But basically, the concept is that we have a cop who has got a working theory that all of the gangs are actually run by one person in the city, and nobody will believe him. And of course, it's true. But the one person that's actually running all of the gangs in the city is a really hot girl, by the way.
It's Destiny, y'all.
Named Destiny, y'all, and it's all written in street slang.
I know. That's it kind of threw me off. And I love it. They tried to make it hard edge from the very first page. I jacked this book from the library once by this dude, Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, how to get Sun Tzu into the Art of War into a street book. I jacked a book from the library, yo.
Quite frankly, I thought the concept was good. I think some of the situations are really good. I really like the idea of sending remote controlled helicopters to wipe out the helicopters, the police helicopters. Really good idea. I really like the idea that this little lady is basically running all of the gangs.
It's a little bit. It's actually a little bit Grand Theft Auto like.
It is.
Yeah.
And I don't like the way that the dialogue is written. I think it's actually I think it's actually kind of downplaying what could have been
a
really solid book.
For C's, Mara, Joe Boys, damn Lamont, you called and day came. Day all here.
Exactly.
It's written exactly like that.
So comics 101, right?
Yeah. So I think if they had written it with the idea that yes, they probably are talking like that, but we get the dialogue in just normal dialogue.
I mean, I actually the story's intrigued me enough.
I'm still going to read it because I like the setup, I like the scenario, I love the reveal at the end where basically they're saying Destiny's going to do this, Destiny, and the cop finally goes, "Wait a minute, Destiny's a person."
Yeah,
you know? I think that's
Lorraine. I'm your density.
I'm your density. So look, it's intriguing, but I don't know if it's going to have legs to start with. 5 issues. May even be stretching a friendship. So
now, Imperial's another one which has caught my attention. This is kind of a little bit like almost like your superior kind of thing in
a
way.
It's funny.
It's funny as hell. It starts off with this guy dumping his father's ashes from the Rocky Mountains or something, and it goes all over the white suit of the superhero who informs him, "I've chosen you of all mortals to replace
me." And the first 2 pages, you're kind of going, did he just release a genie or something? What is going on? He's pouring out the ashes and suddenly this guy has appeared. But then you start to realize that, no, it is actually a superhero. Who is saying that you need to come with me now. My favorite thing about this book, though, is that the superhero talks in these very flamboyant sentences of complicated words, and he's saying, but that's not how I read him when I read him in the comic books. And then he goes back and rereads it and goes, oh, that's exactly how he talks.
And the main character is actually a comic collector. He's a geek.
He's a dork.
And he's a complete dork. And his wife-to-be, I think, is packing up all his stuff, and he's like, does that box over there say dolls? Because they're action figures.
Yeah.
So you got that kind of cliche there. It's like, they're not dolls, they're action figures.
They're not comics, they're graphic novels.
Novels and all this stuff. It's kind of like, even I cringe at that because it's like, no, let's call them what they are. They're comics. you know, we call this a comic book show. That's what it is. But it's got a very knowing sensibility, and, you know, you wonder whether he's going mad or not because he's having dinner with his
and nobody fiance. Else sees him.
No, and this guy keeps turning up and saying, "You ready now? We're gonna whisk off and go off on an odyssey." Off we go. And it's funny. It's funny as hell.
So just so you get an idea, it's got a sequence where the superhero shows up while he's having his rehearsal dinner. Mm. He basically says, "You need to learn to fly." He takes him up in the sky and just throws him through. So he starts to fall. He grabs him, says, "Oh, sorry, I've got somewhere else to go." Puts him back on the ground, takes off. So he starts to throw up because he's just been flying through the air. The wife-to-be comes out and goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, didn't you like the steak?"
So it is funny.
It's humorous.
I'll be back for another. Because it's kind of got that sort of... Yeah, it's got that sort of irreverent.
I don't know if it's got staying power. I really don't know if you could carry this. Unless they take it in a really wildly different direction.
No.
But the joke of the first book will wear out very quickly. Yeah,
I think it's also a miniseries, but I'm not entirely sure about that one. Spread number 2 came out, and the only reason I want to address this is because when the first issue came out, I said, you know what? This is a little bit like The Last of Us meets Saga, because it's got the baby narrating, and two very good things. It's not quite as good as either, but in the back matter of this issue, he says, you know what? There are two books that I'll probably be compared to, and I'm going to wear this. He goes, the first of all is Saga, because we've got a baby narrating it. The other one, he goes, is The Last of Us. And I think a lot of people picked up on that, because it is a very similar storyline to both. He says, look, I wish I could say I was aping those. This book's been developing for a while. He goes, I admire the hell out of both of those books, so I'm not copying those at all. But he said, I think there's a commonality, or a lot of myths have this thing. And it certainly does go off in its own direction. It's got its own tone to it. It's got its own... story going forward about this sort of, and I like the way he's done the disease is like a living, breathing organism that attaches itself to things, and there's these sort of marauders coming around trying to stop him and this baby getting, you know, from point A to point B. I like it because it's kind of, and it's only going to be a short series as well, so I kind of like where it's going.
Right.
But you know, I think you have to realize it is derivative, whether he's conscious of it or not. There are certain commonalities it has with other, you know, post-apocalyptic survival stories. But that's par for the course. Yeah. But I really enjoy the book regardless.
I think my favorite statement that you made in all of this is when you call it back matter.
Back matter.
I like that phrase.
That's what it's officially called. All the notes in the back of things.
I could think of other things that would be back matter. But that's just
those are things that matter, David, in the back. Quickly running through it. Legendary Star-Lord came out. Rocket Raccoon came out. Both second issues, won't dwell on them too much because they're second issues, and we'll talk about them more as the series progresses.
And who knows who they are anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the funny thing. Because the movie came out in the last week, it's almost overnight the two books have sort of become like, you know, their versions from the film. You know, Star-Lord's even more. I don't remember, like, Star-Lord was always a bit laconic and a bit humorous, but there's a certain level of doofusness that Chris Pratt took it to. And he's become more like that in the Legendary Star-Lord standalone book, which is different to what Bendis is doing with the character.
Which kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Look, you know, I don't begrudge them that, because it doesn't sort of conflict with the version of Star-Lord that we've seen before. It's just that this adventure happens to be a little more humorous than the other ones.
Yes.
Rocket Raccoon is consciously going for a wacky, you know...
That's all Scotty Young.
It's all Scotty Young stuff, and it is brilliant. Like, this is what a comic book should be. It's a Saturday morning cartoon in still form. You know, it is really, really brilliant. The thing that intrigued me the most that came out this week from Marvel was Superior Spider-Man number 32, which we thought that had all ended.
It's done, dude.
It's done. But this is the first prelude to the Spider-Verse event.
Ah,
and this shows you what happens with that period where he got sent into the future in the Superior Spider-Man book. What happened, what did he do then? And it's basically Superior Spider-Man, Doc Ock, as Spider-Man, going and building an army of alternate universe Spider-Men to fight this creature that's going through and killing the Spider-Men of all the different universes. I'm intrigued. I'm in. I can't wait for Spider-Verse now, because it looks like it's going
to
be phenomenal.
So Marvel wasn't content on just having an island. Now they have to have a universe.
Hey, what was that? What was that?
The spider.
Oh. Was there a spider?
We haven't mentioned Spider Island.
Not in a while, anyway.
Spider? I've never heard of it. You know who we should ask?
I think Mike Wheeler might know.
Mike Wheeler might know something about
that. He might know
a
little bit about it.
I think I heard him mention it once. Next week coming out, these are the books that are coming out on the 13th of August, is Hex number one from Boom. It's worth checking out because it's got Emma Rios on the art. And say what you will about Pretty Deadly.
The art was great.
The artwork is phenomenal. But book confused me. Dark Ages number one comes out. This is from Dan.
Does anybody actually know what the plot of it was yet?
I've got to go back and reread it.
Yes, I think I do. Because look, Kelly Sue, I love you, but I didn't understand it.
No. Dark Ages number one came out. It's coming out next week. Dan Abnett and INJ Culbert, who are the new Deadwardians team,
I'll
be working on that. So that'll be one to look for. Batgirl 34, Batman 34. Batman 34. I think this is the standalone issue that he does after every arc.
With what's her name?
Hopefully it's what's her
name?
Oh, quick. Someone.
Oh, yeah, the potential new Robin.
Yeah, I've forgotten her name, but you know who we're talking about.
Damn, I'm going to.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
The worker.
The underground lady.
Yeah, she works in the sewers.
Anyway,
the,
it'll come
to us. If we didn't spend like a whole year just like talking about crap, I would remember.
Absolutely. But quickly running through it. Harley Quinn number 9. Steampunk Battlestar Galactica 1880.
I'm there.
Godzilla Cataclysm, which is worth looking at because Cullen Bunn's doing it and Dave Wachter's doing the art. Dave Wachter just got his Kickstarter book, which
I love
is called,
a Cullen Bunn, especially with a cup of tea, you know.
Well, Dave Wachter just did this book called The Guns of Shadow Valley, which is a Western book that I contributed to the Kickstarter and just got the hardcover of that, and it's really, really good. More issues of Genius, Sex Criminals is coming out, Starlight is still going, which we're really enjoying, Walking Dead's out next week. There's a Nova special.
These are the big babies.
The penultimate issue of Original Sin, United States of Murder number 4, and Spider-Man 2099 number 2, we really enjoy.
These are Richard Rider, am I correct?
Nova special might be, but I think the Richard Rider one is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy 18.
Forget my super excitement.
And just get my numbers correctly. Batgirl 34. When is the new Batgirl?
Not for a while. We've got a couple of issues left. I think they're going to wrap that story up. I think that's from September, October.
So we got to start reading early, guys. There's a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah.
I just want to drop in quickly while we got a bit of a break. I've been keeping up with Lock and Key and Fables, and they are the bomb.
I've also been going forward with Lock and Key, and I absolutely adore it.
I've just bought the next two volumes, so I'm there as well. So
sitting on your bookshelf is the new sitting on your iPad.
Yeah, sitting on my bookshelf. It's right there. I can see it.
No, like we're all like, these are things where we've discovered the book and it's kept plowing through, and Lock and Key is definitely going to suck your money as soon as you start buying it because it is good.
I sing Sinead O'Connor to Lock and Key every
in fact,
night.
We reference... wow, dude. We'll reference Lock and Key in the second half of the show because we talk a little bit about Laramie's... actually, we don't even know if we talk... I think we did an interview. We recorded about four things today.
It was about 4 days worth of conversation with Laramie.
Look, I'm just going to hit this button and see where we go from there. And Warner has announced that Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Age of Ultron, will move forward to the 25th of March 2016. It has also secured dates for an additional 9 DC films running through until 2020.
DC Comics will follow the August Selfies Month, September's 3D Futures End covers, and October's Monster Variants with a series of Lego variant covers in November.
What's DC up to now? Avengers Age of Ultron has wrapped principal photography. Joss Whedon announced the news via Twitter with the caption, "What the hell do I do now?"
Marvel is preparing a new printing of the Howard the Duck Omnibus in October. I wonder why. Collecting many of his original appearances in Marvel Team-Up, Marvel Treasury Edition, and Man-Thing, along with his own series.
Why do you let him lick your face? Cartoon Network confirms that the cancelled fan-favorite Young Justice team will make an appearance in Teen Titans Go later this year.
And I won't watch it. David Cubitt has joined the cast of Arrow Season 3 as Mark Shaw, a.k.a. Manhunter.
Sony is reportedly eyeing a female-led film for its Spider-Man film franchise in 2017.
Fox has picked up the rights to adapt the Boom Studios comic, The Foundation, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles writer Evan Dougherty to pen the screenplay.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. gets two new cast members in its second season, Henry Simmons in the recurring role of Alfonso Mac McKenzie and Kyle MacLachlan as... spoilers, sweetie. Sky's father.
Meanwhile, Clancy Brown will join The Flash as General Wade Ealing.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has released in the US to an impressive $25 million opening day, knocking Guardians of the Galaxy off the top spot. At the time of recording, the current global box office takings for Guardians of the Galaxy is around $240 million after a week of screening.
And finally, some sad news with the passing of Menachem Golan, co-founder of Canon Films and producer of such comic book adaptations as Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, the 1990s Captain America, Masters of the Universe, and the failed attempt at Spider-Man in the 1990s. Other films including the classic Life Force, the Death Wish series, pretty much anything with Chuck Norris, and is arguably the man who discovered Jean-Claude Van Damme. He will be missed.
He certainly will be in this household.
Absolutely. It's like, it's like losing a relative.
For those of you who don't listen to our film shows, Life Force might be David's favorite bad movie ever.
Yeah. Of all
bit,
time.
Bit of insight, like David over there actually gave Richard and I a private showing of Life Force and paused it and stopped it and talked all through it.
It was almost like getting a director's commentary from a fan, but David knows this film inside and out.
I've seen this film probably more times than
I think
I've
seen
Star
Wars. To know Matilda May inside and out. But,
if there was ever perfection put on screen.
She is gorgeous in that film. Yes. I actually put the poster up on Facebook just to mark that the passing of this seminal producer. And anyway, you can mock, but I mean, those films were big at the time.
He was known as a mini mogul. And the fact is that him and his cousin, Yoram Globus, rocked into Hollywood and literally.
From Israel.
And literally took over. I mean, they were producing anything up to 40, 50, 60 films a year.
Yeah,
and I mean, when you consider that the entire output of Hollywood is about anything from about 250 to 350 films a year, they were a huge contingent. And if you were growing up in the 80s, every third film seemed to have the Canon logo.
They were
on
like
it.
The 80s for a
they
lot of people.
They were the 80s for a
and
lot
had,
of people.
Had they not gone under, ultimately, Spider-Man in the 90s would have been a reality.
Film.
Yeah,
and we're not saying that Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, or Master of the Universe are great films, but they were prolific. They were just they. And there is a documentary coming out from the director of Not Quite Hollywood called
Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo,
the untold story of canon films.
And I cannot wait for this. And he ever listens to this, man, I want to talk.
It premiered in Melbourne last week.
To favorable reviews.
At the Melbourne Film Festival. So we can't wait for that to come to see.
Unfortunately, it is actually said, he actually did say on Facebook, I was reading some of his posts, they never actually got to interview Yoram Globus or Menachem Golan. They both declined to be interviewed for the documentary, which is intriguing because apparently there is another documentary sanctioned by them. I think they're saving themselves for that.
Which is a shame because these guys know how to put together a docker.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
if you've seen Not Quite Hollywood, it's about the exploitation cinema in Australia or Ausploitation. Magnificent film. No matter where you are in the world, you will have seen some of the films mentioned in that docker.
So we look at this and we go, Menachem Golan, you will be missed. You were a presence in Hollywood. There is no doubt about it. They were schlock producers.
And they were taking, you know, chances on comic book properties before it was a hot thing to do.
Well, one of the things that sunk the company, I think, was the fact that when they made the move into things like Superman 4 and Life Force and so forth, they were going into a big budget arena where they had never played. They were always very low budget. They went into this big budget arena and their films couldn't sustain it. They weren't making any money. They didn't have the quality behind them, what have you, and it did end up sinking Canon. But up until then, they had hundreds of films, you know?
Well,
one last thing. Those who have the rights to half of these films, because a lot of these films are still not available on DVD, those who have the rights, get that stuff out just so we have it as a time capsule that we can look at that period of time.
Because for many people, Canon were the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
this is a comic book show.
In which case, we should probably do the pick of the week. What do you reckon?
Yes.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Following the events of Kick-Ass 2, Hit Girl is in prison, but Dave, aka Kick-Ass, is still trying to fight the good fight on the streets of New York. With his Justice Forever crew falling apart and refusing to help him, costumed heroes soon find themselves the targets of a murderous crime lord. With a new life calling him away, Dave suits up for what could be his last hurrah. Or is it? Written by Mark Millar with art by John Romita Jr., this is the fourth and final adventure of Kick-Ass and Hit-Girl. Evil prevails when good men do nothing. This is Justice Forever. This is Kick-Ass 3.
And joining us for our Pick of the Week this week is our returning guest and good friend Laramie Taylor, creator, writer, and artist on A Voice in the Dark. Laramie, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So we promised last time you were on the show that we were going to do Kick-Ass 3 when it was finished, and it just took a little longer to finish than we anticipated.
Yeah.
That's Mark Millar for you, I think. But you mentioned back at the time that you loved the book and you loved the films in particular. And I think we were talking about this off-air after the interview that we did with you. So what was it about the Kick-Ass books and films that appeals to you?
Well, let's see. Where to start? I actually saw the first film before I read the books.
Me too.
And yeah. And for the first two, I have to say that the books had some really great moments, but they disappointed me overall, and I thought the films were improvements. And what got me into watching or following it to begin with was, you know, obviously all the hype around the movie when it came out, the commercials. Something about, you know, a little 12-year-old girl calling people cunts and kicking their asses. That's pretty awesome. So, the third one, actually, I feel was a stronger piece as a comic than the first two. But, I got into it back around when the first, you know, the films came out.
I think we all thought when we did the second book and way back when, and I can't remember exactly what issue that was, I'd have to look it up. That would have been something I should have done before the show. But
Ever prepared.
Your reliant host here. But when we talked about the last one, which we should point out, that was an explicit show last time, and it will be this time as well, because I don't think we can avoid C-bombs, F-bombs, and all other bombs when talking about Kick-Ass. It's in the title, man. It's got ass in the title. We have to talk about it. But we were disappointed with the second book because it just didn't live up to the strength of the first book. The film, as you already said, made massive improvements. But the film, for those of you who have only seen the film ends at a very different point to where Kick-Ass 2 ended. Kick-Ass 2 ends with Mindy in jail, which is where we pick up with Kick-Ass 3.
And it should also be stated that the film also compressed, which I felt that the book should have done anyway, it compressed the Hit Girl miniseries and Kick-Ass 2 together into one film, which I always felt that they should have been one book anyway. Totally. I don't know why they were separated.
Because have you read the Hit Girl series as well, Army?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, the Hit Girl series is really strong, but what I found really interesting about Kick-Ass 3 is that Hit Girl is actually mostly absent from a fair chunk of this book. In fact, she's certainly not in character as Hit Girl until six or seven or something like that.
You're built up to her in a really awesome way, I think, though.
Dave has to carry the book on his own, basically. Yeah,
yeah. Which and I think that's great because you've got that line through where his Justice Forever people are leaving him and failing him. You've got that great scene in the first issue where they all go to rescue her from prison and then they all leave saying, we can't do this, it's too hard. And she's just sitting there going, what a bunch of pussies.
I think it's like really great because, you know, like she's...
Attack!
I think it's really awesome because she's in prison like for a lot of the first act of this story and that, you know, you don't necessarily know what she does in prison because there's all these references to like, you know, I get things done. Yeah. And then all the guards are like, how do you do that? You know, and so you have this sort of mystery.
Also, the relationship between her and her psychologist is brilliant.
Yeah.
The mind games that she plays with constantly.
And the mother looking in from the glass. Yeah. And you know, they really do like build up to Hit Girl's big arrival, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost...
Yeah. It pays off.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's almost like Millar fell in love with the characters again, somewhere between writing the last one and this one.
Because I think we actually mentioned that when we did Kick-Ass 2, it felt phoned in. Mm. Kick-Ass 2, and now that we've actually got a conclusion to the entire trilogy or quadrilogy, if you take Hit Girl into it, it kind of feels like Kick-Ass 2 was the awkward middle stepchild. We've talked about that with Empire Strikes Back. We've talked about that with Back to the Future 2. The idea that it's a filler. It's there to hold a place in between two fairly solid entries.
This is like really cool because it's clearly Millar like going all in, you know, and it sometimes it's a gamble. Like Christopher Nolan, for example, going all in with Dark Knight Rises didn't necessarily pay off for a lot of people, but this I think pays off.
Well, first of all, did you just call Empire the like weakest of the three.
No. It wasn't.
Dave hates Empire.
I love Empire. I was just talking about the fact that there's always that middle chapter where when you haven't got the complete when you haven't got the complete story yet.
But all the other examples you gave were the weakest link, and then I'm like, wait, Empire what?
No. I love Empire. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't referring to its quality as a film.
I'm not a major Star Wars freak, so I'm not going to like cut you for that.
A lot of people would.
How dare you, Laramie? How dare you? Star Wars has never been bad.
Phantom Menace.
What I think this volume of Kick-Ass got that the last two didn't was a bit... The first two were so brutally, relentlessly cynical. Mm. And the third one kind of went back to a bit of the roots of comics in general and gave it a bit more hope and optimism.
Yes, it did.
It's something the movies have been great at adding to the story that's missing, I think, in the comics for the first two films. But the third comic kind of picked that up and ran with it.
Yeah, I mean, you used the word optimism. The word I used, the first thought I had when I finished it was, I said, it just brought hope back to the whole thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
It stopped spitting in the face of comics in a way. Like, seems to feel like it loves being a comic.
And I think you see that in two things. You see that one with... Dave's actually finally got something to care for again. He's got someone he's fallen in love with and willing to give up the cape for. But he's also, you see it in the motherfucker's character as well. He's like, how did I become the bad guy? I started out being a hero. Mm. How do I get back from that? But that also leads to one of my favorite scenes. It's like he's trying to help Mindy out before she becomes Hit Girl again. And he's like, and towards the end, he's crawling away. He's bad. And he's like, do you forgive me for all the bad things that I did? And she just turns around and goes, don't be fucking ridiculous.
But sorry, Laramie. Yep.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I was just agreeing.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I really like, in particular, the Hit Girl backstory that you get with Big Daddy and, you know, like how she gets her first costume and her trying to overcome, like, her first kill. It's this great, like, subversion of that whole, you know, puberty stage and, you know, the...
And to continue, how cool is it, the shot of her hanging on the bottom of the bridge after jumping off the train, she's going, where's my surprise?
And it's Commando. You know?
With all the cursing left
she
in.
She was gleefully playing along with all of it when it actually came to killing. At the beginning, she wasn't a psychopath or a sociopath. She didn't have that urge. She did have, you know, some guilt or conscience.
Yeah, and I love the way that they actually spin that around. I love the fact that the thing that held her back was the fact that she was worried what her mother would think of her. And her father basically instilled her in, no, it's okay. You know, your mother looking down upon you would be proud of you. And then we have that moment where the mother says, you empower me. Go do what you do. It's just a great moment. You can just see Mindy light up. It's like...
And Marcus is like, ah, shit.
I love that. It's punctuated perfectly by that one doctor who goes, what's wrong with this fucking family?
This whole family's crazy.
Yeah. This is wonderful.
Like, all right, I quit. They're insane.
Looking at it from an artwork point of view, I think Romita Jr.'s art has often been a like it or hate it kind of prospect. I mean, his art has changed over the years, and he's gotten to this very, you know, on the surface of it, it seems simplistic. It seems like it's rough lines, but there's a lot more going on beneath that. And
he's got a very cartoony.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't used to, though. He was much more like his father in the early days. His Spider-Mans and stuff like that were much more realistic. He's developed this style over the years, and now that influences everything he does.
I think that's my favorite part of it, the art, because the art gives it that light feel that's so opposite to what it's dealing with. You know, like it kind of plays to that whole comic books aren't taken seriously, but what if we did take it seriously? And by having the art cartoonish, it becomes harder to take it seriously. But then when you do, you get a bigger reaction to it, you know.
So, as the artist in the room,
it's like watching a Saturday morning cartoon.
So, as the artist in the room here, what's your take on this?
I think part of it is to try to keep it from being too grounded in reality. I haven't seen what he's doing on other books right now to know if that cartoon style is something that he's carrying across the board, like on Superman. I think he's on now.
Yeah, it is. Very much that sort of... It's almost like... as you say, it's Saturday morning cartoons. When Superman punches somebody, you can almost see the rubber banding happening, you know?
Yeah, it's like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but they say cock and cunt, you know? Like,
yeah.
Well, we're earning that explicit tag today.
Oh, come on.
Where's my sensor button? I've lost that. or should I just say... should I just say this?
Oh, take your tampon out, Dave.
Yeah. Pretty much. But no, I think that part of it is to kind of keep it from being a little too grounded, a little too gritty. It does have a bit more... It kind of softens the blow a little bit when it's cartoony. It helps to suspend the disbelief a bit as well.
Yeah, I mean,
I do like the cartoony style, and he is capable, as you guys said, of... other styles. If you watch the films, when especially in the first one, when Big Daddy's painting, that's all JR's art.
Oh, really? Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, he did the art on those, and and those are much more realistic in their drawing of. I guess they named him Frank D'Amico in the movie, but Chris and or not Chris, but Frank, and the little comic story is a bit more back to the Kick-Ass style. When they do the little comic book. But overall, yeah, the art, I think, does... I think it is an intentional choice. And it might be why Miller picked him for that book, was to bring that edge to it.
And it's not like we're all saying that the art's bad at all. The art itself is gorgeous to look at. I think, yeah.
I don't think coloring. Kick-Ass would be the same book without that art. I mean, that's the thing. It has become one package: the art and the writing style. It's what makes Kick-Ass Kick-Ass. It's kind of jarring a little bit when Romita Jr. takes that style out of the Kick-Ass world, because he's Captain America recently in Marvel Now. Well, he's finished now, but his Captain America run that he was doing was very much that style. His new Superman is very much that style. Probably a little bit more realistic than Kick-Ass in the sense of proportions and stuff, but it's the same cartoon style.
Totally. I think it's got that same kind of feel like Ren and Stimpy had. You know, where it lulls you into that false sense of security of like, oh, I'm watching a kid's cartoon.
And then you see
and
a head
then
cut
bang,
off.
You know, like, whoa. You know.
I think we've also got to give massive props to Dean White and Michael Kelleher, who are the colorists on this as well, because this has got that sort of darker wash to it, but it pops. Yeah. It pops when it needs to pop. Mm. And I'll just add a page open here of, I think it's in issue 7, where Mindy takes Dave down to what's effectively the
Bat Cave.
the Daddy Cave or whatever it was, you know. And they've got the Daddy Mobile
which sounds wrong on so many.
I know. Come down to the Daddy Cave. In fact, that's where I'm kept between shows. Down in Dave's Daddy Cave.
I love
cave.
When they slide down the poles and there's the Shakespeare head. And it's like, what's the Shakespeare head? Like, what kind of nerd are you that doesn't know the Shakespeare head?
And that's the thing, and it's kind of getting back to what you said before, Laramie. It's like there's this escalation. It's this return to the joy of comics. It's got all these comic book references. You know, we've had this dark, gritty street book for the last couple of volumes, and then suddenly we've got the Batman cave. We've got all the toys back again, and Miller and Romita's just going hog wild with it.
And I kept getting little flashes of Todd the Ugliest Kid on Earth and all the Mindy jail scenes, but... If you haven't read that, then that won't make any sense.
I've had a flick through that. No, I have had a flick through that.
Actually, one of our listeners was recommending that we should do that as a pick of the week. So, you know, we're working up to it. We've got another 100 issues, 90-something issues to go before we hit 200. So, let's talk about a little bit while we hear about the ending as well. Because we're getting this is... You know, and this is a spoilers and all show, people. And I know issue 8 only just came out this week, but, you know, let's just go for it. This is conclusively the end of Dave's end of the Kick-Ass saga.
Which I'm actually quite happy about.
Yeah. I mean, there is a little stinger post-credits, which we'll talk about in a minute, but...
You know what would be amazing? if they did Kick-Ass Returns like 20 years from now.
Yeah. And he has to deal with the younger Kick-Ass taking his place. No, but you've kind of got this, Jen, and it is the full circle. They even use the same dialogue at the start of...
With the flying guy.
The flying guy. And in the very first issue, the guy leapt off a building and plummeted to his death.
This time he makes it.
It's exactly what you said before. There's that little element of hope. Yes. You know, because and he was that character was introduced earlier. He's like, I'm not some nutcase. You know, this jetpack's going to work one day. Don't you mark my words. You know, and then it does, and it suddenly we're in Miller's world, and you get all these other references that other superhero things are happening because they're Miller's other books.
Well, and I love that piece of dialogue from Dave where it's basically the escalation dialogue. It's very similar to The Dark Knight, where basically he's saying that we started something, but now other people are coming, people with powers, things are actually starting to happen. And of course, it's escalating up into this realm of real superheroes, you know? And I thought that was just a really interesting way of putting it. You know, it's a really interesting way of saying, their little street level thing is done now, but there's more out there. There's a bigger world.
I love this whole, like, superheroes live on and they live on in our minds and in our comics. And, you know, it's funny as well when we've had two movies, and the second movie, unfortunately, as much as I love it, didn't do well box office-wise, so it's unlikely there'll be a third one. And the comic lives on beyond the film, you know?
I think there might be a third film, actually. The only thing that would
There's a film in this comic.
The only thing that would hold off a third film at this point is the fact that Chloe is getting way too old to play Hit Girl.
Yeah, they can age her in the film. It's not...
Yeah, they've already
kept saying the same thing about the Harry Potter kids, and that never ended up being a problem.
that's true. But yeah, the thing is, and also in this, they've kind of like they kind of rewrote the second film to make her a little bit older. Like a couple of years had passed between things. I think they left the second film with her going off on her own, didn't they?
Yes. She wasn't. Yeah. Well, basically, like the end of number three, she takes off to go be Hit Girl somewhere else.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
They could cast Don Cheadle.
Hit Girl and... yeah, it's me, get over it. They could have Hit Girl in Paris. Yeah. That's what we see. Just her swanning about Europe. And that could tie it in with the Secret Service.
I would like to point out, I just had a quick look at box office stats for you. And yes, it wasn't the hit that the first one was. But for a $28 million budget, it did make 60. So it did actually make its money back enough to warrant that they could possibly do a third one.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love to see a Kick-Ass 3.
Yeah,
I'd be there first day.
But don't forget...
I have no idea how they do it, though, because they made so many changes to the end of the second one.
Yeah. Mm.
The third one, so much of the third movie is built on certain premises that don't even exist in the movie world the way they left things.
Although...
So they have to do some serious rebalancing to make it work, but...
An interesting dynamic might be, though, the Mindy in jail thing, and they could do that. She's gone off at the end.
Yeah, she can get captured at the start of the film. Yeah,
she's been caught, you know, and you continue.
Just start her in jail, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She was caught while out roaming around, and now it's all about dealing with that side of it, because that could actually be an interesting turn. The only problem with that is they've actually altered her parent dynamic.
Yes, they have done that.
Yeah, but they could have Marcus basically be the mom surrogate of... You know, Marcus being the one that finally comes to believe in her.
Yeah. They could do it. Yeah. The thing is, I mean, and I think it's good sometimes that the books and the comics separate to a certain extent, because there are things that just won't work on screen. And obviously there's a lot of stuff in this book that they'd have to go for the hardest R possible, or even an NC-17 to get away with.
And even the second film, they had already softened it.
Yeah. And even so, it's because, and it seems soft. I mean, they gave Hit Girl a couple of really hardcore lines in the second one, but it was really hard to, as you said before, Laramie, how do you top an 11-year-old girl, because she was quite young in the first film, turning around to the audience and saying, all right, cunts, what do you got next? Or whatever whatever the line was. Uh-huh. And she was older, so it's not quite as shocking to see a teenage girl swearing.
Yeah.
You know, and the next one. Yeah. So someone who's pushing 20, how is, or just over. And also you've got Aaron Taylor-Johnson. He's off being Quicksilver now as well. So
true.
He's going to be a harder get.
And fighting Godzilla.
Or just looking at Godzilla.
Was he in that film? I can't remember any of the human characters.
He was the Muto.
He was the guy on the train that had a G.I. Joe doll.
That's okay.
That's right. No, you're thinking of Bryan Cranston.
And then passed out at the end.
Let them fight.
Did you see Godzilla, Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it better when it was called Pacific Rim.
Well done, sir.
Godzilla well purists would probably argue with that.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, I know, yeah, because Pacific Rim actually comes from Godzilla and things like that. But I just, I guess what I mean is I felt that Pacific Rim kind of did it better in that if you're going to blow up cities and you're going to have the monster fights and things like that, show them. And Godzilla just teased it for 3/4 of the movie and then had one final fight, you know, throw down at the end.
Yeah.
To where I remember when I was watching Pacific Rim, there's the fight in roughly 2/3 of the way through the movie where Gypsy Danger has to come in and save the others and fight the two at the same time. And that fight scene is epic, and that's only like barely halfway through the movie. And I'm thinking, that's only the halfway mark. I can't wait to see what's coming next.
Laramie, you've made me pee a little.
Dave, if you've listened to any of our film shows, Dave's a tiny bit of a fan of Pacific Rim and Guillermo del Toro. But connecting this to the movies, what I really love about Kick-Ass 3 is that...
Can we just talk about Pacific Rim?
No, we can't. What I really love about Kick-Ass 3...
I'll come back for that talk.
What I really love about Kick-Ass 3 is that they've got the all the film references in there. They actually do two things. They make a point of some of Miller's other comics being part of this universe, but also things like Jupiter's Legacy and I think possibly Starlight.
Well, and the direct cameo of the superior characters in the last panel.
That's right. Yeah.
Where they're coming out of the cinema and he's being wheeled out in the wheelchair and you'd sit there and go, I've read that book.
Yeah, so Superior exists as in this universe, but Jupiter's Legacy and Super Crooks are films in this universe. Yeah. So yeah. And I really like that. I like that he's not just created.
Oh, and
a whole
Secret Service is a comic book.
And Secret Service
is Mindy's assassination.
That's right.
Movie. Yeah.
And I like that so it'll soon be adapted into Kingsman in this universe as well. So and I like that he's created this whole universe on page, like you were saying before, Dave. You know, the comics live on page, but then it's recognizing that, you know, the real world exists as well, and it ties in. It's kind of like what Marvel did with their classic things. The real world. This is really New York. You know, these things actually exist, but it's Millar's ultimate version where he's making massive blockbuster films. Yeah. And he has not one but two films coming out.
It's Millar world.
It's Millar world, exactly.
You touch on something I think that's important to the success of this one is like it is a mature work for Millar. Like he introduces like a serious love interest, not just like, you know, an object like in the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
And now it's like it actually comes to like there's a great moment in there where it's like, oh, Spider-Man 2, you know, it doesn't work that way. A hero would take his love over fighting crime. And, you know, it starts to bring up like this is a real person in a real life. Like, and some things aren't worth it.
Agreed.
Right.
So
gives weight to it, you know.
I would actually like to also point out though the thing with the whole the idea of bringing that heart and bringing that emotion into a work. I think it is fair to say Millar, as much as I like Millar, I mean I really like Millar, especially in short form work. But his work is very superficial in many ways. It's very much it's an action beat or it's a this. I mean, you look at Wanted. Wanted is very, it's a lot of fun, but it's very surface. Whereas this, the final issue of this actually brings that heart, that relationship to it, the same way that Superior did. I think Superior, up until I read this, I think Superior is his most, funnily enough, considering the topic matter, it is his most grounded material. It's actually you feel for the character, you feel for the fact that he is having to make that choice between returning to a wheelchair or having all this immense power, and there's a lot of heart behind that. And I think putting the characters of Superior in the last panel is almost apt because it's kind of like saying, see, these are our serious
but
works.
The movie they've gone to see is Superior 5.
Did you read Superior, Larry?
I have not read Superior.
It's well worth reading.
Yeah, I think we cover that back on way back in one of our issues there. But it was like one of our first kind of self-contained Millar books that we did. And I think this is the thing. Millar works, we've always said, works well in short format books. But here is something he's effectively done over, I guess, I don't know, sort of, I can't remember how many issues it works out to be. He says it in the final, in his final outro.
35, I think it's 35 or 36.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's, he said it started as a 4-issue project called Big Daddy and Hit Girl. And he said, 8 years on, it's been in comics, collections, international editions, Pez dispensers, etc. So 28 issues, he says, all over.
Is that including Hit Girl, though?
I think that's including Hit Girl, yeah. Because some of them were shorter than others, I can't remember.
Two sevens, one eight, and a five Hit Girl.
Yeah, so that's right. So 28 issues all up, two movies. It's a phenomenal achievement based on something that was just a... what if superheroes existed? It tried to exist in the real world concept, you know, which is where it really started. We're all saying as we wrap this up a little bit. I think this is a recommend for me, given it's a massive recommend. You can't read this in isolation of the other books. So I think we're saying we recommend Kick-Ass 3. We're saying we recommend reading the whole saga, plowing your way through part two. But making sure, even though it came out afterwards, I think reading Hit Girl before...
Yeah, so the chronology of it is Kick-Ass 1, Hit Girl, Kick-Ass 2,
then Kick-Ass 3. So, you know, taking it as its totality, it's kind of a little bit like the Dark Knight trilogy in that way.
And what we hope is for an omnibus with the whole series
that
in order.
That would be fabulous, yeah. I mean, it's like the Dark Knight trilogy in that way. It has weak elements and, you know... Controversially, I'm the person who didn't like Dark Knight Rises as much as the rest of the world. But if you take it in totality with the other films, it's a good start. It's a saga. It's a
part three that we deserve, not the one.
and Kick-Ass is exactly like that.
Yeah, that's the part three that we wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. You have failed this
week. I think maybe I would go as far as saying that if you'd seen the first two movies, you could probably pick up enough of it to enjoy this.
Oh, yeah, possibly, yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be some, like, wait a minute, how does she get in jail and why is his mom still alive and some things
just
like that.
Just a couple things, but you wouldn't misunderstand it, you know.
No, you wouldn't.
And the bottom line...
You wouldn't be completely lost and unable to follow the story, no.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest changes in the entire thing from film to books, I think, was the motivation and so forth that drove Big Daddy. And that was a major change between the film and the books, and the fact that he financed it all with vintage comic books that he kept around in his
box.
That's
right.
And he was just a giant comic book nerd and all this sort of thing. And they kind of altered that for the film, which... to its benefit, I think, because I don't think it was.
I think it was better, yeah.
It worked great in the comic books, and I remember it was a real what the hell moment when I was reading the comic book. But I also know that that wouldn't work on film as well. And you sit there and you go, it would just come across as silly on film. So that change was good. So if you'd only seen the films, there are going to be elements that don't make sense. And as well as the fact of why is she in prison at the opening of the book. So I would recommend reading the first two books rather than just watching the films. But you're right. I think you could pick it up. It is a conclusion to the rest of that story.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's better to read the comics if you can, but I don't want to shut people out just because they haven't.
Yeah.
No, great. Yeah.
Because it's like you said, the films have gone on to exist in their own outside of this. There's a reason I brought up Batman before, too, because I forgot there's one of my favorite scenes in this book is where he's standing over his parents' grave, trying out different poses in different coats to see, you know, how cool he looks, you know. And he goes, yeah, I really feel like I'm brooding now.
What was this from?
This is the very first issue of Kick-Ass when he's standing over his parents' grave. He's got the long coat on. Kick-Ass, and he's saying, "Oh yeah, I feel like I look like I'm cool standing here. Look, dude, you look just like Bruce Wayne, you know."
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna have to wrap this up talking about this thing. I think we can all safely say we recommend this as a totality.
I recommend Kick-Ass as an entirety.
As a entirety.
Not just one book.
Yeah, so we're hoping that there'll be an omnibus eventually, but that'll be fantastic.
I don't think Millar does omnibus.
No, he probably doesn't. He didn't do digital for a while. He's caved on that.
So, Laramie, you recommending?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Laramie, before we sign off, where can we find you online?
Well, laramietaylor.com is my website. My book is put out by Top Cow. You can get it. The first issue, I think, is still free at the Top Cow website. And the entire run is at the Image Web Store and Comixology.
Fantastic. And we highly recommend you going and getting that. And we will be doing that as a Kick-Ass Pick of the Week in a couple of weeks' time. When we wrap up this show, we're going to talk to Laramie a bit more. So you'll hear some of that interview in that show that we're doing. Next week, we'll be doing Thanos, The Infinity Revelation by Jim Starlin.
I'm worried. Can I just say I'm
yeah, worried? I know. I've heard mixed reviews on this one.
How funny. We're all worried, but we all bought it, didn't we?
Well, we report on comic books. That's what we do. Yeah. But Thanos Rising was not a good read.
No. All but right, this is Jim Starlin. This is back where he belongs. And it's the return, apparently, of Adam Warlock. So, you know, I'm kind of excited by that. No, it's been widely solicited. Until then, you can find me online and Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at behindthepanels.net. I won't recommend you go to therealbits.com at the moment because it's been taken over by hackers. And I don't know. Lyra and me took the blame for that this morning.
Sorry. I'll stop doing that.
Yeah, look,
I thought it was funny that you said that nobody would notice anyway. I'm thinking, well, the hackers noticed.
They're the only ones who have been visiting the site lately. David, where we can find you?
Where can we find you? You can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. You can find me at geekactually.com, which kind of hosts all of this nonsense. You can find me on Film Actually when we ever get around to recording another episode. And Dave?
You can find me on Twitter at Dave Longo. And Laramie, we need to do a Pacific Rim podcast, I think. There's nobody else I can geek out with for that film. I'm telling
you. Not this room, anyway.
You guys didn't like it?
No, I liked it. I'm not Dave.
I'm not Dave.
They just didn't think it was the best movie ever.
I liked the robot monster stuff. I didn't like the talking writing stuff.
Shameful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Larry,
I'll forgive you.
Larry, thanks again for joining us on the show. Will you join us in a round of as we take each other out, as we always do? Until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And Laramie Taylor.
And this is Behind the Panels. And welcome to issue... Fuck. And welcome to Behind the Panels issue 104, the comic book show that believes with no power becomes no responsibility. I'm going to do that again.
Yes, please.
And welcome to Behind the Panels issue 104. No.